The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight, at least for the time being, the man behind the sound effects is at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter. Our normal sound guy at Agent underscore 70 will be joining us as soon as he's done getting his dinner eaten. At Roddy Cat on Twitter cannot be with us tonight, but he did provide the news for this week. And a little later on the show, we will be joined by one of the Decepticomics at the Dylan One on Twitter. And that is, that is in honor of Decepticomics Week on the CSPN.us website. The Decepticomics have been guesting on all the CSPN podcasts this week. They have a couple of comedy shows coming up this weekend in DC and New York. We'll make sure to actually, if you go to CSPN.us, you can see the links to the events if you want to buy tickets and support the show, so make sure to do that. Bless you.
It wasn't me, but sure enough.
And if you are going to websites, also go over to theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation. And actually, I need to start sharing the actual link to the Click Nation Google Plus page. It is google.com/+TheClickNation.
It's a nice and easy URL.
Yeah. Especially when you start having to add in the forward slash. I won't say slash, but since I work in IT and I know people don't know forward and backslash.
Yeah, but everybody just knows the one slash. Like, they never use the other slash. They don't know what it's for.
That is true. Let's see. You can subscribe to us numerous ways. YouTube.com/TheClickNation. And search for us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. On iTunes, make sure to give us 5-star reviews and also written reviews. We'll start trying to read those on the show.
Oh, really? You're going to start reading those?
I need to actually see if there are any on there.
Make sure they're good.
Yeah. And also on Stitcher, make sure to give us the thumbs up and reshare the shows on there. Let's see. Of course, we are part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network, CSPN.us. And let's see. Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron on your favorite social media websites. And if you're ever home on a Thursday night, we go live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So go ahead and tune into the show for us. And I just remembered my laptop's not plugged in, so
just going to lose you about halfway through the show.
Yeah, I always end up doing this. I throw it up on the desk, and I'm like, oh, getting all my stuff set up. So I just like throw it up on the desk and plug it into the laptop and never actually plug it into my thing down here. Get a nice visual for the people that are watching live. Me reaching under my desk. There we go. All right, let's see what's in the cinematic news for the week. Oh, and also make sure to go to the CSPN's shop, which is redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. You can buy Cold Slither or Comic Book Chronicles mugs, I think there's a mug, a t-shirt, a phone case, and much more. Buy our stuff, damn it.
Okay, here we go. There's the store.
Thank you.
Hey, there's a bunch of stuff. T-shirts, hoodies, stickers, iPhone cases, posters. Posters? Huh.
I might have to buy a poster. Is that 26 something?
I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff with prices. Looks like posters are $12.96.
Okay. I need to get that and like put it up on the wall behind me so you can see it.
We need to put our faces on it so it's all just us smiling.
I want to animate it. I need to find an artist to do artistic renderings of us.
Well, now's a good time to make a plea. Just call out there to people watching.
Yeah, let me do that. Actually, let me fix my charging station here.
Oh, we got a wonderful shot of your armpit right there. That was right up the sleeve. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll screenshot that.
It's a very intimate count with Chronicles tonight. Okay. Let's see. In cinematic news for the week, as if this needed confirmation, but Spider-Man is confirmed to appear in Captain America Civil War. More Spider-Man news. Rumor going around is that the next Spider-Man movie under Sony/Disney/Marvel will have Kraven the Hunter as the villain.
And that's actually exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch that.
Some people are like, oh, he's not the right villain for a first movie. It's like, well, this isn't his first movie.
Technically, this is like the sixth movie, so.
Yeah.
Get
to some of the cool villains that we haven't seen. And then if he stars in the movie, that means he'll make a return in the comics.
Maybe.
Because Dan Slott likes to do that. Let's see. We got an animated short for Guardians of the Galaxy on Disney XD. I'm actually kind of interested to see that show when it starts. I think there's going to be like an hour-long premiere in September.
Oh, I forgot that's an XD show.
Yeah.
We don't get XD, so I'll have to find other venues procuring a copy of that show.
Yeah. John Ridley talked about his Secret Marvel TV series and said all the rumors are off the mark. That's one way to confirm things. And, Roddy, I'm reading this off my iPad, so I can't see the notes that you've added, so sorry if I don't say anything that you've added on.
Oh, here, I can see them. So you read it, and I'll add in the notes.
Let's see. So last week we said Channing Tatum was out of the Gambit movie, but Swerve, he's back in.
And Agent 70 added, boo.
That was Agent 70. Notes.
Not a fan.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's all right. I don't care one way or another, really.
Me either. I mean, it's a Fox comic book movie. I'm just like, do what you do. See it just because I go see these things. But I've seen how they've done the X-Men movie, so.
Are you skipping the S.H.I.E.L.D. news on purpose?
The Kermit?
Well, there were three of them.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I was, but we can talk about them since you brought them up.
Well, they have notes on them, that's why. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's get into them. Blair Underwood is returning for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3.
Okay, there's no note on that one, but the next one.
Doesn't like this one has one, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Elizabeth Henstridge hints at Simmons' Season 3 fate.
And Rodney says, it seems I might have been right in the Treasury edition, not that they were ever going to kill her character.
And Kermit Frog wants to join Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which is Thor Frog. Think about it.
Think on it. Mm. Jessica Jones, showrunner, confirms Daredevil's Dawson will drop in. And along those same lines, Marvel's Netflix Luke Cage will fight Cornell Cottonmouth in the first episode.
Is that good?
I don't even know who that villain is.
I don't either. That's why I was asking.
I'm like, okay. I wonder if there'll be a Luke Cage series, solo comic book series.
Like a new comic point. Because there's a Netflix. Well, at the very least, they'll reprint a bunch of old stuff just so they can put a Now on Netflix banner across the top of it. But I don't know if they do a new one. Well, let's see. Has anyone been hinting about a new Marvel? Actually, they have.
Yeah, well, last Friday, that's Alonzo stated that there'll be a lot more series and black creators being on books to soon be announced. So you imagine, I guess, Luke Cage would be involved in one of those series.
I think that would be the perfect time that they would start to throw something in there. Makes sense. Is your dog attacking your desk there?
I was typing.
Oh, okay. I heard a rumble.
Yeah, he's acting weird today. But no, he's downstairs. Let's see. We had the red and green band trailers for Deadpool. You usually don't watch trailers, right?
Sometimes I do. It depends. But I watched the Comic-Con one that they leaked, and I'm not sure if that's the same as the red band one or not.
It is. But you see it in clear without, you know.
Okay. Well, I watched the Comic-Con, you know, leaked footage from one cell phone, and I thought it looked good. It looked hilarious. So
yeah.
If it's the same one, then fantastic.
I like definitely the red band trailers better than the green because they edit out the cuss words and naughty jokes.
I think it would be a fun experiment. Is after the movie comes out and, you know, everybody's putting copies online or whatever, I might grab one and just try to edit it into a, you know, PG-friendly, family-friendly version. I think that'd be fun. It might be a lot of work, but I might give it a shot just to see what it would take.
Try out your video editing skills.
That's right.
See, Deadpool director hints that we'll see Cable as the villain in a sequel. I like how the X-Force rumors have just, like, gone away. Like, yeah, X-Force is coming. Is Rock going to play Cable? Is Cable going to be the new linchpin of the X-Men movie franchise?
Did they announce, is Deadpool going to be deep in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or is it just its own thing?
In the X-Men Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Colossus is in it, so he was a different actor. So I think it has ties.
Hmm.
I wonder if they'll mention their Weapon X program. That would be a big, big key, I guess. Because, yeah, you'd have to have him included in the X-Force, right?
Right. You know, they might do some type of thing where at the end of the movie when he, you know, he does all his stuff and blows stuff up and he's all over the news and whatever and then, you know, beats the bad guy, everything settles back down, he'll probably walk out to his car and there'll just be three slash marks from the adamantium claws, you know, across the door or something, just to let you know that Wolverine exists in this universe, but they just couldn't get him in this movie. Hey, the music guy is here.
Ha, ha, ha. What's up, everybody? Right,
I'm going to close that window now. I don't need it.
Agent 70 is in the building.
Welcome.
Sorry I'm late. I was listening in as you guys were talking about the Deadpool trailer. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I got a real kick out of the what seemed like the joy that Ryan Reynolds was having playing the character, you know, and I got a real sense of that, so I kind of enjoyed that. And you know, Deadpool's just one of those characters that, you know, he exists in but still on the periphery of the Marvel universe, where, you know, I think Fox has a lot of leeway with the character now, and they can do a lot.
Make sure to read the notes section for me, Agent 70, when I get to a news segment, because I'm on the iPad and it doesn't show me the notes.
Ah, so the notes I see here that Roddy Cat has dropped in very many of these.
Yeah, you had one that was Boo, right, for Gambit?
Oh, yes!
Because you don't like Gambit or you don't like Channing Tatum?
I just don't like the Gambit movie. I don't like Channing Tatum playing Gambit, so Boo!
All right, so next up is Star Wars live action TV show.
Wait, hold on. We got a tweet update from Roddy Cat. He says that there was an article about Ryan Reynolds trying to get Hugh Jackman to pop up in the Deadpool movie.
So stay tuned.
Yeah, they might have been able to sneak something in at a Comic-Con or something, get a little bit of footage.
They'll probably like show Wolverine's body like locked up in the Weapon X facility or something, frozen in carbonite.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Star Wars live-action TV shows rumored for Netflix. And I see there's a note on there.
Yeah, this is something that Roddy Cat wanted to put in last week's notes, but was an oversight.
So
Why would they do it for Netflix?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a Disney stake in Netflix? Because that's less of a Marvel thing, unless because they negotiated all the Marvel shows, they figure that there's already a door open and they could negotiate something for Star Wars, but otherwise it just seems kind of odd that that's the platform Star Wars would go to.
I don't know if it's odd. I think they're just trying to take advantage of what, you know, seems like the cool new way of delivering this content. and they see how successful Daredevil was, and they want to jump on in partnership with Netflix. I understand why this seems a little strange, why it's not on ABC, because that is their network.
Artistically, so, it's a lot better if it's on Netflix, because that means it can
be... There's still not going to be like nudity and swearing in it or anything.
Right, but you know what? Maybe what they're doing is taking advantage of the fact that these Netflix series oftentimes don't have an entire like 22 episode run. So maybe what they're going to do is try to deliver, you know, maybe a smaller binge watching type level of content. That may be why, you know, they're doing it through Netflix as opposed to doing it on ABC, because it's a lot of money and a lot of work to put together something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where they have to go on hiatus just to take a break.
And then more Star Wars news. They will begin a new limited edition individual Blu-ray steelbook November 10th.
Roddy notes, cha-ching!
Oh, that's the sound effect. You're supposed to play the sound effect.
Right, but you know, it's the note.
DC Entertainment releases Suicide Squad movie official trailer breakdown.
Okay.
Arrow adds Ryan Robbins as Shadow Spire villain in season 4. We get some early designs of what Vixen will look like and what Arrow will look like in the Vixen animated series. Supergirl taps Jenna Dewan Tatum as Lucy Lane, a.k.a. Channing Tatum's wife.
Oh, is that who that is?
I had no idea.
Does she do other stuff?
They've been in like one of those dancing movies together. She's been she was the lead in a Lifetime series, which is
something that you watched pretty intently on Lifetime Network.
Hey, give me time. Let me take this time to plug the show that Jennifer Love Hewitt was on Lifetime, where she was worked at a masseuse place where they gave happy endings.
Would you pay more than 10% tip on that one of those?
I'm sure it's in the bylaws.
Love it.
Let's see. Falk Henschel cast as Hawkman in Legends of Tomorrow and will also be an appearing in the Arrow and Flash crossover.
And he's also the version of the reincarnated Egyptian prince. So that's the version of Hawkman they're going with.
Okay.
So not the guy from outer space. He's the, or not the guy who's given powers after finding a magic stone or magic armor or anything like that. He is the latest reincarnation of an Egyptian prince who is fated to reincarnate throughout time along with his soulmate, Kendra Saunders. So there you go.
There you go. DC Legends of Tomorrow finds this Vandal Savage. And I don't know the guy's name, but the picture that everyone was circulating of him, he looks like a perfect casting.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Casper Crump, who was in Tarzan, apparently.
Yeah, but he looks the part.
Yep.
Gotham Season 2 loses two regulars, dials up the crazy in new trailer.
Yeah, Montoya and her partner, whose name I can't remember, are both... they're at least leaving the show as regulars, but they may be popping up in small appearances here and there throughout the season.
Okay.
The 90s Flash is now available on CW Seed.
I saw this. I was kind of happy to see this news, that it's available again. What's the matter, Dirt? No fun memories?
You know, I watched it because it was the comic book show that, you know, hit TV after the Batman movie. So,
right.
You know, but at the same time, that suit.
With the velvet suit?
Yeah, that suit.
The velvet suit?
It was red crushed velvet with fake muscles sculpted into it. It was terrible.
Brings back good memories, though.
But it's still better than Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, no!
The Flash cast Kate Keenan Lionsdale as Wally West.
Rodney says he was in Fan Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Rabble.
Okay.
Rabble. That's my word.
Rabble, rabble, rabble!
I guess.
Stealing my words.
All right. I haven't what's going on.
Bruce... Botts Lettner talks Tron 3 cancellation, says he's done with the franchise.
Mm.
Sure, the franchise was done, period, so he doesn't really have much say in that, right?
Stupid George Clooney and his stupid Tomorrowland movie.
They ruined everything?
George Clooney ruins everything, yes. That is very much true.
Fantastic Four ditches Dama Chef name, keeps Von Doom.
Oh, we're spoiling part of the movie.
Are we?
Somewhat.
Oh. Have you seen it?
No. God, no. What the?
I could have delayed the show tonight so I could go to like a 8 o'clock viewing.
Goodness gracious. I'm glad you didn't.
So since, I guess this is a good time to get into Fantastic Four discussion because early reviews are coming out. Rotten Tomatoes has it very low ranked.
Is it at 11%?
Is that something that some people keep screenshotting the score?
And my son wants to see it, so we'll probably see it this weekend. And it won't matter. You know, he's 10.
Yeah.
So
it'll oh, wait, be it's a... down to 9%. Oh, my God.
But you want, who actually reads Rotten Tomatoes scores before they go see decide to see a movie? I never look at reviews. But I know what I'm in, I know what I'll pay to go see.
I mean, you know what it is? When it comes to superhero stuff, I think we treat that differently. But when it comes to, you know, so, you know, maybe dramatic movies that we're not all that familiar with, we may, you know, consult, you know, our local paper or Rotten Tomatoes to see what the aggregate score is or what the other reviews say. You know, we're making our own call for this. It's pretty telling that the number is actually lower than what I had last seen it as. I had last seen it as 11. It's gone down to 9.
The thing that stands out to me is that this movie is based on the Ultimate Universe and not the classic Marvel Universe, and that may be throwing a lot of people off, especially people who are the somewhat casual fan who may have read, you know, a dozen Fantastic Four comics when they were in high school and not really familiar with it since. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a completely different feeling, a completely different, you know, universe than what they're expecting Fantastic Four to be. Because Ultimate Fantastic Four definitely had a much darker tone and a much different feel. That's where the Marvel Zombies came from.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the Ultimate Fantastic Four. You know, so it's not what I think people are expecting. But hey, I'll see it this weekend, and we'll discuss it next week.
Wow, this you'll see, but you didn't see Ant-Man. Did you see Ant-Man yet, Dirt?
I've not seen it yet.
The son wants to see Fantastic Four.
Yeah, my son wants to go see. See, I hate going to movie theaters because generally there are other people in them.
Right. Well, I'm surprised that your son didn't want to see Ant-Man.
Nah, he really didn't. He really likes Fantastic Four, though.
Okay.
I can see that because who would want to go see a movie about a dude that shrinks?
And talks to ants. Yeah.
I kept saying that if anything was going to be a quote-unquote bomb for Marvel, it was going to be Ant-Man.
And Marvel knew better.
I mean, it wasn't gangbusters, but it made what it needed to make.
Yeah, at least.
So, I guess to finish up the Fantastic Four talk, since none of us have seen it yet, mixed reviews, people are now starting rumors that Marvel and Fox are going to work some type of deal out because in another news segment, which I can get to now, there's an X-Men TV series confirmed in the works at Fox. But Fox has to get permission from Marvel to make a TV show about the X-Men. So the people are trying to put two and two together that, oh, they're working on, like, Marvel will allow Fox to make a X-Men TV series, and in return, Marvel gets to use Fantastic Four in their cinematic universe. I don't believe all that, but hey, I didn't think Spider-Man would be showing up in Marvel movies, so there you go.
Hey, did you announce that? Did you read the bit about Warner Brothers and Hasbro teaming up for a Dungeons & Dragons movie franchise?
I'm sure I skipped it.
Oh, you shouldn't have, because that's big. That's big. They, you never know. They might pull in some of the really big celebrity D&D fanboys like Vin Diesel into this, and you know that'll immediately draw people to it.
Actually, Dungeons & Dragons movie franchise probably would be. I mean, it'll be just like every other fantasy franchise out there, I guess.
Yeah, but they would do it as Vin Diesel versus The Rock.
Hey, go big or go home.
And have The Undertaker make an appearance.
You know that'll sell.
It definitely would sell.
That would sell, you know it. All right. Sorry about that.
That's about it for the TV news, or cinematic and TV news.
Okay.
And the rest of the next section is nothing but interviews. And Roddy, I like that you put this segment in here, even though I don't actually read it on the air, because I like to go back after the show and read the interviews.
It's an internal thing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it can be like, I mean, I guess I could say, like, you know, Al Ewan and Ken Rockefeller talk about the Ultimates and on comic book resources, and Stan Lee's tips on how to create a good superhero. Have a friend named Jack Kirby, right? Hedlund and Cowan talk Milestone 2.0.
I'm actually curious to read this last story about a panel at San Diego that where Marvel artists reveal secrets of modern character design. I'm kind of curious to read that.
It's pretty good. I skimmed it this afternoon, actually.
Cool. All
right. Comic book news is kind of short this week also.
It's the dog days of summer, you know?
Yeah. After, I guess, between San Diego and, I guess, whatever. New York's too far away. But, yeah, the doles after San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, everyone's on summer vacation.
And just an update, our guest, Dylan, will be joining us shortly.
Yay!
When he gets on, we'll probably go back and get his thoughts on some of the news that we just went through. Let's see, comic book news. Top Shelf and Troy Little bring us Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas in October.
Okay.
Hitman 47 gets a free prequel comic from Boom Studios, and they make another video from Fox. It is Stark Week, hashtag Stark Week at Marvel, so get a bunch of free Iron Man comics a day, digitally. Marvel's Hercules is no longer bisexual, and Black Knight gets a book.
Okay.
So I guess we can talk about the Hercules stuff at least. So the last two Atzel in Charge articles on CBR have been interesting the last 2 weeks, because each week it seems Atzel Alonso, who's the editor-in-chief at Marvel, seems to piss someone off, a group off each week. Let's see, last week it was, I forget exactly what it was about, I guess black people and not having jobs at Marvel and not enough black creators and characters, and this week it was him making remarks that Hercules would be played straight in the 616 universe. So there was outrage and rabble about that, as Dirk plays like he's asleep.
What do you mean playing? I'm sorry, I just woke up. What?
That's funny.
So we'll have to see what he says this week on Friday's column. DC Entertainment announces first collections of the new DCU for 2016.
Woo. Okay.
Angela edges out Darkhawk in vote for next Marvel Legends figure.
Oh.
I didn't even know a vote was going on, but hey, at least Darkhawk made it to the finals, I see.
That's funny.
I would have voted had I known. Archie is coming to Broadway with a musical from Adam McKay.
Where's the sad music? Where's that sad trombone?
Fine.
Trademark Office suspends Marvel's registration of North Star.
Really?
Curious. And Kamala Khan, Jane Foster, and more join LEGO Marvel's Avengers this January.
That's cool. Good to see those characters, you know, making their way across platforms.
I saw the images for that. That looked, Marvel LEGO, is that like a console game? Roddy Cat would know.
I believe so.
Now I'm getting the document open to do my ad read for the week. What's it going to be this week? Let's see. We'll go with Amazon. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Chronicles free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Cool.
Sure, why not?
Time to review some books for the week.
Yeah, I got to type in my books. I got a lot of reading in the last couple of days because of making various appearances, taking the subway during the day. So, of course, I have my trusty tablet with me to read my academic copies. Plenty of reading.
I'm reading Dirk's notes on the books he read. There's one I want to ask him about when we get to that book.
Is that Zombie Tramp versus Vamp Blade number 2?
Say what?
What?
I said, say what? I'm like, who publishes that?
Action Lab. You're not reading all the books from Action Lab that come out every week?
I get their emails now.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, dude.
I read the first arc of Puppet Master. That was all right.
You need to let me know which of their issues I need to be checking out.
Didn't Action Lab put out Fight Like a Girl or Hit Like a Girl, something like that? I got the trade. I haven't read it yet.
Mm. I don't know about that. They do one called Princeless, but they also do Zombie Tramp. So anyway, what book do you want to start with?
It says Danger Zone, but anyway, go ahead.
Tell me how Steve Rogers is a hypocritical douche in Civil War number 2.
You know, that was an in-house comment that was not actually made for broadcast. I mean, you know, Casey's out there listening. No, this kind of goes back to the comment that I made after reading the first issue, that it was surprising that the two sides, being as different as they are, really follow the same paths and are really very similar, and you see that here with the way Steve Rogers is acting. He's supposed to be freedom and happiness and kind of like the happy freedom hippie to Tony Stark's, you know, evil fascist, capitalist, corporate dictator guy. But you see Steve Rogers actually, he's not a nice guy in this Civil War universe. He has his own sins to atone for in this war. And, things just don't always play out as nicely as I think a lot of fans expect. Mm-hmm. And again, this is one of those Secret Wars tie-ins with Battleworld that I was not looking forward to at all. I thought this was going to be just another stupid, quick tie-in, cash grab, throw the title on a book so people will buy it. But this is actually turning out to be a really good series. And the artwork is beautiful, by the way.
What I was going to say is just to piggyback on that, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but just on the writing and the art, you know, this is a top-level creative team that they put on this book, so it's not surprising that this particular story, this particular Secret War story, has become very interesting. And I think I agree with you, it's very nuanced. It's not as cut and dry as I thought it was going to be, and I give Sol a lot of credit for that. Like you said, he's given Captain America a very rough edge in this. It's not as cut and dry a difference between Captain America and Iron Man as we sort of thought in the original Civil War. So, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And in terms of the art, you is killing it on this. And I think it's interesting that two of the Secret Wars books this week have Peter Parker kind of being very the SAT word that popped into my mind is bellicose, warlike, combative.
Man, that's a $10 word on this $3 podcast. Slow down.
Get your SAT review books out, people.
Nope, I'm long past those days. Long, long past those days.
My question is Steve Rogers just worn down from this war between the blue and the iron, and that's why he's become a curmudgeon?
Curmudgeon, yeah. Possibly, and also I think that Cap has always been a good soldier and a good kind of in-between leader, but when he's actually the general, I think writers tend to write him as more fallible. You know, he's not just being the battlefield commander. He's being the, when he's the overall general and kind of taking a step back from, having his boots on the ground, that's when a lot of writers tend to, like I said, make his decision-making a little bit more fallible. So I'm willing to chalk that up, chalk this characterization of Steve Rogers up to that.
I also wonder if Sol is making a little bit of a statement here about the original Civil War, because that's one of the things I didn't really like about the original Civil War, is that it tried too hard to elevate one side over the other, mm-hmm. whereas this is trying much harder to bring them to the same level. So it's not a clear cut and dry, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. It is much more, there are things you like on one side, there are things you like on the other side.
Right.
It's not always good guys versus bad guys. It's just sometimes one struggle versus another struggle to play out to see which one's best. And so I think that Sol is, playing off that idea a little more. And especially, this is a story from the regular Marvel universe that ended, and somehow it's become its own universe, right, continuing on Battleworld. So obviously some things would have to be different in order for it to continue in this manner. But I give him a lot of credit for it. He's put together a really good story that makes you re-examine a lot of the things that you've thought about in the Marvel universe for the last, I don't know, what, 10 years? Was this story 10 years ago? Yeah.
Close. It's close. Unbelievably so. It's probably very close to 10 years old.
It's a good book.
And
it's
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I did like seeing that we got to see other members from both sides, like the X-Men and mutants seem to be with Steve Rogers and the Blue, and Tony Stark had Bucky on his side. And plus, we find out that it seems both sides are being played.
Right, right. And, I'm glad that, just to finish off on this particular point, I'm glad that, this is continuing, that a lot of the Battle World or Secret Wars series that are kind of going off and creating some really new story territory are the ones that have become really compelling. I'm pleasantly surprised by this event. I'm really giving it up to some of these creators and some of the stories that they're telling.
This is one of those alternate timelines, though, that I wish would turn into an ongoing Marvel Universe.
Big what-if for an Elseworlds?
Yeah, like, keep going.
You never know. You say that enough, Marvel might just listen and do it.
No, I've complained about lots of other stuff in the past. They never listen.
All right. Let's see. Wow, I really did read a lot this week.
Well, pick something.
Well, I haven't had a chance to take a look at anybody else's list yet.
Well, just pick something you read, and we'll chime in if we've got something.
Darth Vader number 8. All
right.
Man, I didn't get to this yet.
Oh, you didn't get to it? I won't. Dang it.
Oh, that's fine.
I did. I read it.
All right. Well, I don't want to spoil too much because Tim did not read this, but this is this is obviously a direct continuation of what happened in the last issue, where we find what we think is Aphra, the supporting character that's been introduced, or one of the co-leads, I guess, now of this Darth Vader book. Aphra possibly going off on her own and following through on the plot that she hatches right in the last panel, the part of the cliffhanger in the last issue. And without spoiling too much, things basically go to plan. Bounty hunters are deceived, possibly betrayed, but ultimately what we have at the end of the story is Darth Vader sort of getting what he wants, but the Empire is also hot on the trail of what might be going on kind of keen to what Darth Vader's planning.
I'm a little conflicted because on the one hand, I would think if you're the Emperor and you're the ultimate Dark Lord of the Sith, you would have to know that there's something going on. Like, you would obviously have to feel it. But then at the same time, once I think about that, if you are the ultimate Dark Lord of the Sith, you might want to let it
play out. Yeah,
it might be something, like, even if it is, for the sake of argument, and I'm not predicting that this is what's happening here or anything, but let's just say, Darth Vader is planning some sort of coup on the Emperor, okay? If you're the Emperor and you are evil and the embodiment of evil, you might be okay with your demise coming at the hands of someone else who's more evil than you are,
Right.
I mean, that's not what's happening here, but just, keeping that idea.
Mm-hmm.
He may obviously know that there's something else going on with Darth Vader here, but then at the same time, he may just be willing to let it go. And hey, if he can pull off something great, then he pulls off something great, and student becomes the master, and that's the cycle of the evil life continuing. So
right,
so
it's the circle of evil life.
On the one hand, it seems like it should be a plot hole, but then on the other hand, you could definitely no prize it right out of existence and go with it. So
right. And by the way, Dirt, after last week's neutral to somewhat negative reviews of the artwork on the main Star Wars book, isn't it nice to see that Sal LaRocca is staying super consistent on this book? Right?
This was definitely much nicer.
It's just super consistent. You could just flip through it, and you could just appreciate LaRocca's consistency, his, the sharp lines, the great design, the great likenesses. It's just all good. with this.
There's no ambiguity. There's nothing that you have to look at and try to figure out what exactly are they showing me here. So you know exactly what's happening. It's just clean. It's crisp. It's clear. It's meant to tell you a story.
Right. It's so well done. I mean, LaRocca is really one of the best out there, and the way the style and the finish that's being put on this book it translates so well.
I read the previous issue over the weekend, and it seems like each issue they add a little layer of like intrigue, mm-hmm. like especially how like the last issue ended is like ooh. Yeah, this is fun.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Can't wait for the crossover with Star Wars in the, Fader Down?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the name of the event.
Yeah. Hey, Dirk.
I hope it doesn't get delayed. I was just going to say, I hope it doesn't get delayed, because crossover on something like this, I hope they're already working on like Chapter 5 of it to make sure it comes out on time.
Okay.
All right, what were you going
to
say?
Dirk, talk to me about something that I didn't have a chance to put in because I scrolled down so fast to see what everyone else was reading. Red Skull number 2.
Sure.
Tell me about what you thought of this, because I just finished reading this just before I got home.
The Red Skull certainly has a lot more personality, it seems, in this series. And whether or not that is because he's not technically our Red Skull.
Right.
He's from some other alternate timeline that has found his way through Battleworld down into the area below the shield.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the characterization of him. I like how he's more hands-on, more cunning. He's in the middle of danger. He's still playing it, you know, cool as a cucumber, knows exactly what's going on, can handle everything. And Magneto is much more of a fish out of water, you know, playing second fiddle to him. And I think it's a very fun dynamic between the two. There's a third villain that gets brought into the fold, and I don't know if it's been spoiled anywhere or not, and if I should not really mention it. I don't know if I should say his name.
That's fine.
They're getting involved with another villain who seems like a very bad choice.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like a really bad idea to bring him in on this plot they're unfolding, but... at the same time, though, it is the Red Skull. He's thinking five steps ahead, and very well could be, you know, double-crossing everybody in what he's got planned and what he's going to do. My ultimate question, though, is his goal is to take down Doom and somehow destroy... Yeah, and I'm not sure if he were... I mean, let's think it through to the end. If he were to dethrone Doom as head over Battleworld, then what? Like, how would he convince everybody now that they have to follow him? Like, how does he suddenly have the power as opposed to everyone else just turning on him? Hey, you killed Doom. He's our great creator, leader. You know, I just don't see how he's got that planned out. But I don't know if that's something that's going to work itself into later, or he's just not going to get that far, so they don't really have that mapped out, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more likely that he's not going to get close enough. But, yeah, I mean, my understanding, I mean, we're looking at this as you know, and we benefit from reading most of the Secret Wars event, where, like, at least my understanding is Doom is the one thing that's holding everything together. So you take him out, everything falls apart.
Right. But it's not really clear how he's wielding the power and how the power, you know, if you kill him, does all of reality disappear? Does everything shatter and go back to the way it was?
Right.
You know, it's really not clear on how all of that works together. But I, with all of that in mind, I mean, that's kind of like big picture, play things through to the end. As far as this being issue 2 of this ongoing series, I really like the characterization of Skull. I really like the way Magneto is following him along as just, you know, the soldier doing his duty with no idea of, you know, what his next, his commander's next move is going to be.
Right.
And I just think it's fun to watch those two, you know, play through the story. So it's enjoyable, but I don't think it's going to be any sort of key part of the whole Secret Wars Battleworld storyline.
Tim, I think you and I read Infinity Gauntlet number 3.
I did.
Now, I enjoyed this book. This is one of my sleeper candidates for Click of the Week because I got a real kick out of reading this book from Thanos' perspective.
Yeah, and I enjoyed him using the time stone to go back in time and try to change events, and basically he's just been using it over and over again. He's using it like infinite lives in a video game.
Right, right. Sort of resetting things. Like, oh, wait, I messed up. Let me go back.
So he uses it to go back and try to befriend the Nova family, getting good with them so they can start collecting the Infinity Stones. And let's see, Star-Lord and Gamora are working together.
Right, in this I was about to say, in this reality, they're still very much pirates. And, you know, they're kind of, you know, out for themselves and scavenging as best as they can. And what we find in this issue is that, you know, Thanos is trying to ingratiate himself with this family of Novas before they become Novas. And, you know, his plans get more complicated because of, you know, the appearance of Gamora and Star-Lord. And because of, you know, some of the things that they run into and the use of some of the gems that they discover along the way. And there's another member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'll ring the spoiler bell. There's another member of the Guardians of the Galaxy that appears that they find, and it's kind of amusing, the entire exchange that leads up to us discovering that, yes, they have in fact found Groot, and he himself is holding onto one of the Infinity Stones or Infinity Gems.
Did they ever say which one it was?
Whichever one the red one is. I think that's Space. But I could be wrong. It's been a while since I've looked at all the gems and tried to figure out what they all are. Okay. But let me tell you, one of my best laugh out loud moments this week of reading this week's books was the last page of thought bubbles from narration from Thanos. Do you remember that part? And you know, without spoiling too much, Thanos basically says, I can hear the voice, and the tree won't shut up.
Yeah, it's kind of, I like how they had him come up with the I am Groot.
Yes, 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 yes. I will kill it first. This is all Dustin Weaver, by the way. This is, I believe, written and drawn by Dustin Weaver.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. Dustin Weaver and Jerry Duggan. I apologize. The story is Dustin Weaver and Jerry Duggan.
They split the script. Or
they split the story.
Split the story and one does the script.
Right. No, I give Duggan a lot of credit with that little exchange. That little bit of narration at the end. That was pretty funny. I actually laughed out loud when I read that because I could hear. Not that we've heard Thanos really speak a lot. We haven't heard. What's the actor's name? It's escaping me, fellas. Help.
Chris Pratt.
No, the guy who's playing Thanos in the movies.
Chris Pratt.
Sorry. I'm a Guardian. That's the only actor that comes to mind.
Oh, he's a Josh Brolin.
Brolin.
I've heard Josh Brolin speak as Thanos a couple times, and I could just hear that, you know, the kind of the gravelly delivery. So that's that. How about
our guest? What happened to him? He's in. He's out. He's in. He's out. He's in. He's out.
I saw.
Yeah, he said the call keeps hanging up on him. Trying to figure out what's going
on. Stop hanging up on him, Tim.
Yeah, my plan is working.
Let's see. So, yeah, y'all can keep going while I try to work with him.
Okay.
Let's see. Have you read Ultimate End?
I have.
I read it, too.
Oh, we have? Well, this is something we all read. Look at that.
Something's wrong.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
With that, with this book.
Okay, all right. So, Tim, I can explain away one of the things that you're upset about, but the other one you've got me on. I cannot explain how Ultimate Captain America is still alive.
You picked up on that, too. Okay.
Hey, well, first, is our guest on.
Hey. Sorry for being terrible at things.
Welcome.
Yeah, Jarvis was messing up, and, it's turned into Ultron. Happened. What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Always blame Hydra.
So
let me do the formal introduction. We have at the Dylan One on Twitter here with us from the Decepticomics. In honor of Decepticomics Week. Go ahead and do an intro and let everyone know about yourself, Dill, and I guess where they can find you and the events going on this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'll get all that out the way. I'm Dylan. I am on Twitter, as Tim just said. The Dylan One. We're doing shows. If you know the Decepticonics, we're five dudes with a very nerdy, geeky sensibilities who do stand-up comedy together. We got big shows in New York on Friday and two shows in D.C. on Saturday. You can search brownpapertickets.com, search Decepticonics, and you'll get all the info about those shows at a New York Comedy Club in Salty Dog. I'm just a dude on the internet who also likes comic books. I feel like there's not enough people on the internet who like comic books or nerdy stuff, and I think we should utilize that more as a place to communicate and argue. That's just my stance on things. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but,
I think since Agent 70 is in Brooklyn, obviously he should be getting some comp tickets for stuff going on this weekend. That's
right.
Just throwing it out there.
Let me know.
You go. I'll swing through. I'd already put some time aside to see if I can't swing through tomorrow night. The show is tomorrow night, 9 p.m. at the New York Comedy Club. Was it East 21st? 24th Street?
East 24th. That's it.
There you go. Yeah,
you guys do your research. You know things. So what's going on? What did I interrupt? I apologize. What's going on?
We're talking about books. So, one book we're about to get to is Ultimate End number 4. So, of course, this is a Secret Wars book taking place. It's basically marking the end of the Marvel's Ultimate Universe, and they're doing some kind of mashup with the 616 universe, and I forget the numbering for the Ultimate Universe. Was it 1601 or 1610?
Whatever.
1610, yeah, something like that.
I think you're right, 1610, I think you're right.
So we're about to argue over this book, basically.
I only read the first Ultimate End, and I was so lost at what was going on that I was like, I'll just wait for a trade paperback and maybe try and go back and I couldn't keep up with it. So I don't know if it's gotten better up to the fourth one. What are you arguing about?
Well, it's still hard to read.
Okay,
still very hard to read. I've tried to read 1, 2, and 3, trying to get myself up to speed to read this, because I believe Bendis teased at the very beginning of Secret Wars that issue number 4 would make things much clearer, and it's only served to make things much more, in my view, annoying. But that's another story.
That's always fun when somebody's like, "Hey, this is going to be confusing for a lot of it, but we'll make sense." Maybe at some point,
At this issue, make sure you get that issue.
Which also happens to be the final issue.
This is the final issue? I thought there was one more.
Yeah, number 5 is the last issue where we get all the answers. So we have to read through 5 issues of nonsensical nonsense to get the final explanation.
That's so crazy.
All right, so Tim had two main problems with this book. So, Tim, lay out your two biggest problems with this issue.
So, number one is, why is the Ultimate Captain America still alive when in Ultimate's Last Stand, I thought it was pretty clear that him and Thor both died? So that's one. Mm-hmm. And how is Bombshell shot in the head by the Punisher and only gets a scratch on her ear?
Wait, spoiler bell!
It was not a spoiler because she isn't dead.
Oh, yeah, but she got shot by the Punisher. That's actually a big plot point.
All right. As far as Ultimate Captain America goes, it's Battle World.
Yeah.
They were pulled out from an earlier point in time. It's professional wrestling. It doesn't matter. Just watch the people hit each other. Just go with it. But as far as Bombshell goes, though, if you look, they were very clear to show that when she gets shot, it's grazing across her forehead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's grazing across her forehead and nicks her ear, I guess, is how it works out. Because then the next time you see her, she's got the blood gushing down her face, coming down over her eye.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a glancing blow because she's shooting out her little bomb firework jubilee thing at the same time. And so his aim is a little off while he's being blinded by her throw. So she gets, technically, yes, she gets shot in the head, but it's a glancing graze.
It's a graze wound. It's a flesh wound.
So she might have a concussion.
I'd like to point out that they made sure to make this I'm pretty sure if it's not a full-page spread, it's basically the equivalent of one. So basically, the Punisher, who's this big killer who can shoot people from across rooftops, is unable to take out Bombshell when he's standing, less than 2 feet away from her.
Yeah, but it's the Ultimate Universe version of mm-hmm. Punisher. So it's not like the real Punisher.
Exactly.
That's another thing. I can't keep up with who is supposed to be the ultimate version of who.
It's the text. You got to read the text.
Yeah, I forgot you explained that again, especially
okay,
with
Okay, so the ultimate characters from the 1610 universe, all of their lettering is done with the proper capitalization. So you have the capital letter at the beginning of the sentence, and then all the rest is in lowercase. But everybody from the 616 universe, the classic old-school comic book universe, all of their text is in all capital letters, like the way comics have always been done. So that's how you can tell who's from which universe.
Is that something they broadcasted to people, or is that just something you picked up on?
That's something I picked up on, because I noticed a couple of years ago that in the Ultimate books, that they all did that, where it all did uppercase and lowercase. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird, because most comics do all uppercase. It was just one of those things that stuck in the back of my mind, and then when I started reading this book, I realized that they were, you know, following through on that. You've got word balloons, and some people are all caps, and some people are capital and lowercase, and there's my nerd cred right there.
That is very interesting, but also just a stupid way to be able to keep. I think everything you touched on is why I had such an issue with the first issue. Was like I couldn't tell who was who, and then I was like, half the people that I remember being dead were back, and I was like, I get that the Battle World thing is like a good like way to just reset all that, so I'll give them that, but. I didn't know I was supposed to be paying attention to grammar. I feel like I failed as an English student.
Oh, you always got to
pay. No, you know what it is? Grammar. It's because it's not so much grammar, it's typeface.
Yeah.
And it's all, and if you're just so used to just kind of reading quickly as opposed to, you know, kind of absorbing it, you will glance over that. I did not pick up on that in the first issue. Dirt had to explain that. This isn't the first time that Dirt has had to re-explain it to us.
I have to remind you guys
exactly.
Every time we come back to this.
Exactly. Like, why don't I understand this? Well, this is why. But, you know, at this point now where we are in issue 4, I just want to see it end. I want to see where this is all going. It's like, what the hell is going on here? But there were a couple of interesting things that Bendis introduced in this. One is that Doom, sitting in Doomstadt, understands that this particular section of Battleworld has an active anomaly, a dimensional anomaly, and an active resistance against what Doom has tried to build in terms of like a creation, like Doom's version of creation.
Yeah.
So, and he's at least in this issue, spoiler alert, willing to let it run its course. So we'll see what happens in the next issue. But I thought it was curious that Doom has allowed this particular. Anomaly to exist, knowing that it's really a true amalgam of the Ultimate and the classic Marvel U.
Well, one of the things that comes to my mind, and this goes back to discussions we've had about Secret Wars, the main series itself, is that Doom is actually, for the most part, pretty benevolent as a god. Like, you would expect him to be much more
iron-fisted
in his rule. Yeah. And he's not. He's actually not bad when it comes to being the ultimate ruler.
He got what he always wanted. Like, this is, he just wanted to be in charge. And if they had just let him do it, things could have been so much easier sooner.
He's proving that he should have been there all along.
See, but here's the thing. But here's the caveat, or I guess maybe the sub-point to that is, he basically took over Reed Richards' life, right? He's got Valeria as a daughter. He's got Susie Q as a wife. So, you know, maybe those influences have kind of created some sort of balance for him. So that
that's just smart planning on his part, really.
But he comes across as more balanced now because he's gotten that level of you know, like family and you know, finding a significant other and all that other stuff that he'd never had before.
Well, and I wonder, thinking back to what we talked about with Red Skull, where what's the final play? Like, where does this play out? What's the end game in a scenario like this? And I wonder if Doom, you know, he saved the universe because he had to, and he rebuilt it as Battleworld because that's the best he could do. And I wonder if this fight within this amalgamated universe, he knows will lead to the universe unraveling, and this is what will ultimately save everyone and send things back the way that they're supposed to be.
Right, or this will actually, you know, this is probably going to be the reality going forward.
And there is a tease at the end of one character that could sway the tide of this battle between both universes.
He's your character on the cover, Miles Morales.
Yep.
And I will say that you were saying how God Doom is basically handling business and taking care of Battleworld, but he's doing all that except for if you're a mutant, he seems to have a problem with mutants. If you read any of the X-Men related titles.
That's true.
That's just because, Marvel doesn't have rights to the movies. So.
He's the head of Marvel. That's
true. Exactly. Exactly. He's got bunny. He's got mouse ears underneath the Doom helmet, right?
Oh my God! What if he takes the mask off and it's just Mickey Mouse? That'd be the dopest thing in the world.
Product placement.
That'd be dope. I would buy a second copy.
Where are the crossover issues where all the characters are replaced with Disney characters? Like where like Goofy is Miles Morales or something, and like they need to start capitalizing off of that more. I need that.
Yeah, IDW needs to get off the rights to Donald Duck and them.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah.
But like, the point with like Doom having the family, that's one of my favorite tropes in like anything, is when you raise your enemies like children as your own. Like I will forever love that like Anthony Hopkins Zorro movie, because like the dude, like he took my daughter and raised her. That seems like so much work to like just be petty with your enemies. It's like, I'm going to raise your kids and take care of them and do very well. It's like, all right, I guess.
It's like the opposite of a Maury episode.
Yeah.
Like, you are the father, and then he gets up and does a little dance, you know?
Oh, no. Oh, boy. All right. So, are we done with Ultimate End number 4? I can't believe it garnered that much discussion.
We are.
We got something better?
I don't know. Let's see what else other people read. Ms. Marvel number 17. I see Tim read this.
I think I just read that on the way home today, so I probably can put this.
The dog does not like Ms. Marvel.
Yes.
Trying to mute my microphone over here.
He could hear the dog can sense that we're talking about you. All right, so let me lead with the Ms. Marvel number 17 discussion. So this is basically a little bit of fan service for Kamala Khan, where she gets to finally, at the end of all things, at the end of the world, team up with her personal heroine, Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel. Captain Marvel, I'm sorry. As Ms., you know, make it a Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel team up. And, you know, it really was a nice little story, a nice little interaction that G. Willow Wilson drafted between the two of them, because, you know, at the end of the world, what is there to talk about? You know, what is there for them to talk about? They can only do so much. One of Carol Danvers' lines in the book is, you can only, you know, it's not one of these problems that you can punch in the face. So, you know, while they're dealing with the current deteriorating situation, there's also the matter of Kamala Khan's brother having been kidnapped by the now inhuman her crush who's under the sway of Lineage, one of the evil Inhumans that has been introduced in Soul's Inhuman run. So, you know, it's we have a story that's going to be continued in. How many more issues are left in this? I think one or two.
It's got to be one of the two.
Right. So, you know, it's not quite done in this issue, but you know, we do get to a point where you know, it's leading into what may have been happening to Kamala's brother while you know, after he was kidnapped. It's strongly implied that he's been exposed to you know, not really spoiling it here because this is one of the inhuman corners of the universe. He's been exposed to Terrigen Mist. That's what at least is implied in this, and we'll see what happens next. And that's our cliffhanger. But, you know, this was a fun little read. Like I said, it was a little bit of fan service for both Kamala Khan and for the fans of the book who've been waiting to see what would happen when Carol Danvers and Kamala Khan actually cross paths.
I'm glad that they finally got around to talking about, you know, yes, Kamala is an Inhuman, has the Inhuman gene, so what about her brother? Obviously, he should have some type of effect to it, you imagine.
If it got passed on to him, that's the thing. It's the way genetics works. Not everything is passed on to every sibling.
But then that would just make him boring in the comic book universe.
Or very dead because he's been exposed to the Terrigen Mist, so we'll see.
You know, well, I guess it could be like...
Maybe he's just got a bad Terrigen allergy. Like,
maybe. I was gonna say, I guess that doesn't ring true because was it Inferno's mother passed? She didn't survive the transformation, I think.
Right.
And there was something else I was about to mention. Right. Well, off of that, but why is Captain Marvel's color scheme different in this issue?
The gray?
Yeah. Is it because the color of the Earth about to collide?
No.
And everything?
No, because I think, I don't know if there's a little bit of confusion going on, but remember at the end of Avengers,
mm-hmm.
she was wearing this color scheme where they had gone gray.
Because of
the rift between the Illuminati and the Avengers.
Right. I forgot about the 8-month time jump.
Right. So because of that time jump, you know, we have the, you know, we have the Avengers who were basically trying to hunt down the Illuminati, going all super shield, super military, you know, being led by a super soldier Cap.
Old Man Rogers.
Exactly, Old Man Rogers.
We never found out why Hawkman had a metal arm. Just throwing that out there.
Everyone gets metal arms in the future. Thor.
That's right.
You know, get yourself a metal arm. What are you doing?
Bucky needs to get his regular arm back.
Exactly. And we still don't know why Steve Rogers, Old Man Rogers, was portrayed as both super-duper fit, super-duper muscular as an old dude, and super frail. I don't know what's going on with that. Are we just going to ignore that? That's just, you know, my little five-second fanboy rant.
I mean, maybe, you know, he spent some time in the gym. You know, it's never too late to get in shape. That might have just been old-fashioned hard work.
Possibly.
A little creatine.
Seriously. Muscle milk. That's
but, yeah, I did enjoy this issue of
it was a fun Marvel. Read, right? Like it was just it was nice to see them interact and to see the kind of treat each other very quickly as equals.
Yeah, she's had team ups with Spider-Man, Wolverine, Medusa, and the Inhumans. So she finally got one with her idol before the world ended.
Where's Lockjaw been? I just realized that like he wasn't in this issue at all. What like wasn't
I think
like
he's. She had him
helping out.
Yeah, helping out, and then that sort of ended.
I mean, that's a good question. I hadn't thought of that.
I just realized, like, because that almost ended up becoming one of my favorite parts of this series is like her and Lockjaw together. And
well,
I just
that...
realized he wasn't in this last issue.
He's gonna take him to the kennel for the end of the world.
No. Well, he may very well be because it's the end of the world. May very well have been called back to Attilan. So. But, you know, what's funny is that you mentioned something that I wanted to at least touch on. Seeing Alfona's art on this is so great. And it was Adrian Alfona's art that, on Lockjaw, that issue where he shows up with the sign around his neck that says, my name is Lockjaw, I like hugs. You know, like one of the most endearing, one of the most, like, kind of lasting images that I have of this book in my head. And it makes me smile when I think of that particular, you know, that particular image. So, you know, I give Alfon a lot of credit on this book.
Yeah, this book has a lot of, like, you realize you're, like, smiling ear to ear while reading it or thinking about it factor that, like, maybe, like, a lot of other books, like, may not have. It's like, oh, my God, it was goddamn adorable.
agreed. All that's right. Funny. All right. What do we have?
What did y'all read?
Well, it's mostly a Marvel week this week.
There were a lot more Marvel books this week, definitely.
Yeah, unless it's DC. I did read, I guess I can get to Omega Men number 3 right quick. It's still the political thriller book from DC. A lot of intrigue. It's kind of like a little swerve at the end where basically the issue introduces a princess on this in this Vega system and Omega Men go to kidnap her. And she is kidnapped before... Or after taking out a couple of the Mega Men in process, she's thrown into a cell or a holding place with Kyle Rayner, who is also a prisoner of the Omega Men. And then we find out that, spoiler alert, that she's in cahoots with the Omega Men and is sleeping with their leader, Primus. So I guess we have to wait to find out why she would orchestrate her own kidnapping.
Okay. Yeah. I like the art on this, by the way.
Yeah, it's by, I think this might be, I'm sure he's done comics before, and I just aren't familiar with what he's done in the past, but I think this is like his first like big two gig. He's from Indonesia, if I remember correctly.
No kidding.
Barnaby.
He's a homeboy. Barnaby Bagenda. Wow, now I got to Google this boy.
That's just a good name.
I got to Google this dude. My man.
Yeah, I read an article this week where they were interviewing him, and it was on either Newsarama or Comic Book Resources. If I see it, I'll send it to you to read it.
I was about to say, I gotta reach out to this guy, get him on the show. Maybe, you know, we'll speak Indonesian together.
We need to find out what the time difference is there.
12 hours, exactly.
Oh, okay.
So right now, it is 10:39 a.m. Friday morning.
That's not bad.
He can wake up, have his coffee, because everyone drinks coffee but me.
That's right.
Hop on the Comic Chronicles.
Now there you go.
Eastern time.
My man.
A.m. Indonesia time.
That's right. My man, I'm going to find this guy on Twitter in a little while. All right, cool.
Tell us about John Flood, Dirt.
Okay.
And Dirt, I did read this too, so...
This is one of those books that really took me by surprise. I really didn't know what to expect from it. This is from Justin Jordan, who just finished up Deep State. I was lamenting the end of last week. And this is a... Detective.
This is a Boom Studios book.
Yeah, it's Boom Studios. Okay. He's a detective, and he was experimented on by, I believe, the government at some point in the past, and he no longer needs to sleep. And since he never sleeps, his brain is now constantly in a dreamlike state. So while he's awake and looking at the world, everything looks crazy, and he begins to see patterns that other people don't see. And he begins to pick up on clues that other people don't see because he views the world so differently. So he's kind of that weird Sherlock Holmes kind of...
Savant type.
Yeah, like the guy from Johnny Depp's character in From Hell, okay. Who would... smoke the opium and drink the absinthe and, you know, be able to put the clues together. He's kind of, you know, living in one of those type realities. The way this first issue is set up is he's picking up this almost like a bodyguard type guy, you know, to come with him, and he's being introduced to him and kind of going through his process and talking about all the weird stuff that's going on. And he's beginning to notice that there's a serial killer roaming the United States. And his pattern that the serial killer has is that he has no pattern. He may kill you with a blunt object one day, and then he gets on the road and travels 200 miles, and he'll shoot three people, and then he'll, you know, go one town over, and he'll hack a couple people up, and then he, you know, he's gone, and you don't see him again for 3 months, and he shows up somewhere else, and it's another random, it seems like a series of random killings, but somehow Flood is able to pick up on the fact that there's a pattern into his lack of a pattern. Mm-hmm. And somehow he's put these pieces together. And it looks like it's one of these things where he foresees something terrible happening in the future because of him trying to track this guy down, and that's why this big, bulky guy is being brought into the team to be his bodyguard. So there's a bunch of different stuff that's all happening at the same time in the story, and I really like the idea that as I'm sitting down reading this, I really feel like the writer has figured out, you know, 6 issues ahead, 10 issues ahead, whatever. You know, he's got everything mapped out and has now worked backwards to bring us the first issue, as opposed to someone who starts and doesn't really know where they're going. They just have a basic idea, but they're just going to put out monthly issues until they randomly get there. This feels like there's a whole bunch of layers and structures and everything in place that it's going to lead you to that final issue. So I really like that feeling when sitting down to read it. And I found this just to be a really fun book. It's one of those that you got to read like 2 or 3 times to pick up on all the little things that are going on and pictures in the background that, you know, at first glance they don't seem important, but then you go back a second time and you look through some of the stuff and things in the background of the panels and you start to realize that there's more going on and his dream state where everything gets all weird and warpy and... you know, things are melting in front of his eyes and whatever. It's just a fun book. I really enjoyed it all the way around.
I liked it. I liked the setup. One of the things that took a little bit of it was a little bit more difficult to comprehend was the introduction of the big bulky guy, the ex-cop, who is definitely destined for a major role in this book. And, you know, there was a whole, you know, that was the a big part of the middle of the book, and that threw me off just a bit. But, you know, once I guess the best thing to do is kind of reread this to really get a full sense of it. Once you get to the end, it does make you, and I give Jordan credit, it does make you want to go back and read it and see what you may have missed and see how everything is really pieced together very well. I liked reading this. I'm intrigued, and I do want to read the second issue. So I give the creative team credit for making something that has enticed me to come back a second time.
It sounds dope that they've made Jaden Smith's life into a comic book. I'm just really enjoying. It sounds dope, like this dude that just lives life a different way. He sees things differently, and he knows more about what's going on than anybody else. Like, that's Jaden Smith, and I'm glad he's finally getting the sci-fi treatment he deserves. That's dope.
Does he track down serial killers in his free time?
Who knows what Jaden Smith does in his free time? Time isn't real. He doesn't have free time. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I was going to say, he does attend. Doesn't he attend weddings in Batman attire? I think that did happen.
Hey, you know what? Maybe Battlefield Earth was just a cover
while he was trying
to track somebody down. You know, he was trying to get evidence, and it's just one of those undercover jobs that just got out of hand.
Is he still supposed to be Static Shock at some point? Is that still a thing, or is that like a rumor?
No idea.
Rumor so far.
Okay. I forgot about that thing.
That is funny.
Yeah, who knows what will come of that. We'll be reporting on it, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. All right. So let's see. What else did we read this week? How about we stand on guard number two?
I read it.
So
did your dog read it?
That was his reaction. Moby, what do you think of We Stand on Guard number two?
Silence.
Oh, no comment.
Silence.
If you say something nice.
Seriously. I want to tell you that with the, you know, my favorite part of this book, I mean, the story is okay. My favorite part of this book is the Steve Scrooge art.
Okay. Yeah. He has a name from at least my 90s past.
Yeah. He did Spidey. He had a long run.
Wasn't he the artist on X-Men with Jeff Loeb?
That as well.
Yeah. I know my stuff. I'm trying to remember what happened in this book, though.
Well, basically, it's a direct continuation of what happened in the first issue where, you know, we're introduced to this character who is rescued by a group of Canadian freedom fighters, and the premise of the story is that war has broken out between Canada and the United States, and the United States, with overwhelming military might, has trampled most of Canada, and we are now following some of the freedom fighters.
I like seeing the main character, I forget her name, but seeing her like interact with the different members of the group she's with.
Right, and spoiler alert, Scrooge does a nice side too.
Yeah, in a shower.
I like how you waited for the spoiler bell on that one. You're like, no.
I had to ring the bell.
This needs the bell. It deserves it. We will give it the proper honor it deserves. I respect that.
All right, so something on my list to read this weekend. Got it.
Listen, like I said, the story is okay. The characters aren't that, you know, to me at least. Maybe I have to go back and reread one so that it's a little bit more fresh in my mind. But the art is what really does it for me. It made me want to keep turning the page and just really absorb some of the line work and the layouts that Scrooge put in.
I didn't read this book, but every time I look at this cover for 8 House number 2, I just want to punch this dude in the face. I've got nothing more to really add about it, but there you go.
Oh, no!
That's a very memeable face. Memeable pick right there.
That's funny.
That could be its own marketing scheme. Like, buy this book, punch this dude in the face.
Best punch gets, like, featured in the next issue.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Dirt, I almost tried to read this. Detective Comics 43.
Well, okay.
Do I have to talk about it? Yes.
The overall structure of the story is not bad. Okay. The problem is that this book, because it is bringing you this new Batman in this new reality of the DC universe, Batman has to have a Joker. And so with Joker being the big part of the old Batman's life, of course, the Joker for this Batman is Joker's daughter, which is one of the most uninspired characters. I just cannot stand anything with that character, and immediately, as soon as I turned the page and she appeared, I was like, oh, this book just went from like an 8 to a 4. Mm. Like, I, you know, it's it just drives me insane that that character still exists and hasn't been killed off. And then, because this is a Batman in a robotic suit, they, of course, need to have a Joker with a robotic suit.
Nice.
So there's a Joker bot that appears towards the end of this issue, and that just took it from like a 4 to a 2.
No, know? No.
It was just like I get the idea of what they're trying to do on a meta level, but it's not working for me, you know. And like I said, the structure of the story, if they had brought in, I don't know, the Riddler, and they had a giant question mark on a crane that was demolishing buildings, I would have been 10 times happier with a giant question mark on a crane than a Joker bot from Joker's daughter. Mm. Especially because it's Joker's daughter who has no money. She lives in the sewers. She's wearing a face that she found floating in a pile of vomit underneath Gotham City, and so she put it on, and now somehow she's got the resources, the ability, and the hookups to create a giant Joker bot that this Batman has to fight. So I get it. I don't like it, and not my favorite issue of Detective Comics in a long time.
I enjoy how much you dislike this book, and I want to check it out now. What else could they do to make it worse? Like, that's what I want to know. Like, in your eyes, like, what's something else they could do to have made that story even worse? Because it seems like they hit rock bottom for you.
No, I mean, they could have done a crossover with the Valiant Universe for no reason and thrown it in this issue or something. Like that. You know, something pointless like that would help, but
I had totally forgotten about Joker's daughter.
Yeah, and life was good, right? Now she's back. So
I guess they said she's not in Suicide Squad anymore, so.
Oh, so I can go back to reading that one. All right.
Yep.
But yeah,
new cast.
I'm hoping that this is one of those, you know, they put the cliffhanger at the end of this issue, he'll take care of it next issue, and then it's gone and done, and, you know, that's the end of that for a while. I hope. I pray.
I'm going to go get this book. I'm gonna
sales. He's going to sale.
He's gonna be standing in Forbidden Planet and be like, oh, this is awesome.
The only other DC that I read this week was the Justice League Gods and Monsters Wonder Woman, and I was able to finally sit down and watch the animated movie that these tie into this weekend. And this character, for being Wonder Woman, this is an alternate timeline, the Elseworlds. We had Batman, who was actually Man-Bat as a vampire. Superman, as it turns out, is actually, well, this might be a spoiler. Hit the spoiler bell in case people haven't seen the movie yet. Superman is actually the son of Zod and not Jor-El, which explains why he was such a douchebag in the issue that featured him. And this Wonder Woman is actually one of the new gods. This is the granddaughter of Highfather.
I was about to say, from the cover, it very much looks like Barda.
Yeah, and so it made a much more interesting dynamic in the animated movie than it played out in these one-shots that they've released. But they will be following up these one-shots with with issues that look at the team instead of the individuals. Mm. So the continuing story of this version of the Justice League. So this book was basically, she comes to Earth, she lands, she finds a group of hippies on a commune and thinks, hey, these are nice people. I'm going to hang out with them. And then she just happens to discover, like the rest of the world did, that these people are smelly and dirty and they can't be trusted. And she ends up on the mission. So, I mean, lesson learned. Hippies are dirty and don't trust them. And we can move on from there. So needless to say, with that type of lesson to be learned from a book like this, I thought it was great. 4 stars.
That's funny.
That's hell.
What was
it they called a 180 from your review of last week's book?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm looking forward. Watching the movie, you know, clears a bunch of stuff up and makes it not as bad as it was, having read those books blind. So I'm actually looking forward to reading the next specials that come out featuring the whole team.
I'm going to go back into my iTunes and change Nas's album from Godson to Zodson. Just because I feel like that parallel should be made. Word puns, sorry.
That's funny.
Won't happen again.
Alright.
And I'll just add, this is better than Detective Comics 43. Just in case you weren't clear on that. I just want to make that clear.
If the Joker bot beat up some hippies.
Oh no.
What
I would be conflicted. I'd have to do some real soul searching. I mean, that's coffee and cigarettes in a diner at 2 o'clock in the morning, rethinking my life if that were to happen.
See? There you go. You just gotta utilize a Joker bot in the right way, maybe.
You got to use the tools you've been given, not work against them. That is a life lesson, indeed.
Joker bots. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. All
right. All right, so what else did you read?
Are we in rapid fire? Rapid review?
Sure.
All right. Very quickly then, Siege number 2. This was another addition in the story that is surprisingly entertaining. It pulls together a lot of the elements from the various versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we know, including the Weaver Hickman S.H.I.E.L.D. that tells us the story of the earliest versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. with Leonardo da Vinci and whatnot. Basically, what's happening here is that the S.H.I.E.L.D. wall that separates the bad areas from the safer areas of Battle World is being attacked en masse by the united groups of the Ultrons and the Marvel Zombies, and this is basically the other side of that. There's one book, Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron versus the Marvel Zombies? That tells one side of the story. Siege tells the other side of the story. It tells the story of the heroes who have been exiled to defend the wall. It tells their story to defend the S.H.I.E.L.D. wall. So this again is another Battle World book that is surprisingly good. The story it tells is surprisingly engaging and entertaining. So, you know, while it's not one of the top Battle World books that I would recommend, it's still done very well. Groot number 3 was also a surprising read. This is a very warm-hearted book. The premise for the Groot series to date is Groot on a search for a kidnapped Rocket Raccoon, and in this issue, sorry.
Oh, and, I thought I was muted. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And this story, this issue has Groot running into Dawn Greenwood and the Silver Surfer, presumably before the end of all of reality, you know, as a result of the incursions in Secret Wars. And, it's really a warm, touching story that, there's actually, believe it or not, I think this is kid-friendly. There's a kid-friendly moral to this particular story. So if you wanted to hand a book to a kid that had, like, a good point to it, it's a little bit of Now You Know and Knowing Is Half the Battle. It's a little bit of, The More You Know, the NBC jingle. But,
Groot, actually, I give Groot to my son.
Good.
He's 10, and he actually likes the series a lot. Rocket Raccoon was not as kid-friendly. We need a little more discussion on that one.
Yes.
But this one so far has been much more, it's one of those books that it's not quite all ages,
right?
But it's very close.
It's
that mild PG before the PG-13 was a thing,
Yes, agreed. But just to finish up on this issue, it does tell just a very, very warm story, and I had a good time reading it, and this is another sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. Let's see what else. I think we got to everything else I wanted to. Oh, Guardians of Nowhere number 2. I think Tim read this also.
I did. So it's the origin of Yotat, the destroyer of the destroyer.
Yeah, and I'm just like, really? Who cares? Who is this guy? Why do I care about this character? Tim, tell me why I need to care about this character.
Just because he'll probably survive Secret Wars and make it out into whatever.
It's a Bendis book, so it's a very good
Choice. Yeah. That's one of our other caveats. That's one of our other rules for reading Secret Wars, right?
I mean, his whole origin is kind of funny, just like the whole how he tried to double-cross his boss and then got double-crossed and thought he was killed, but he wasn't, and somehow he got, like, mutated into this big buff dude, and
right.
he goes to get payback and then gets beat up by
Drax.
And then comes back for some more, and I did like seeing their version of the Nova Corps in this issue, which is right. basically like Nova, doesn't really say which one it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who else we had? Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Venom, who's the bald-headed chick that looks like a Beyonder?
Moondragon.
So that's their version of Nova Corps.
Yeah, again, I had a lot of trouble caring about the antagonist in this because his name is Yotat. I'm like, really? I can't get past it. I'm sorry.
And you just know he's going to make it out of Secret War.
With a different name, I hope.
Yo, man. Bro, you got your Yotat.
Oh,
sounds like yogurt.
It's a brand of yogurt.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yogurt, an acceptable name, and Spaceballs, though.
That's true.
Let's not forget.
That's true. All right.
Yeah, that's all I think I read this week.
Yeah, I think I covered everything I read. How about you, Dirt?
I guess the only other thing
I have. My actual candidate, like clear candidate for Click of the Week. I'm surprised Tim didn't read this. Amazing Spider-Man number 3. Renew your vows.
Yeah, just ain't got to it yet.
Oh, Tim, you got to put this closer to the top of your list, man. Again,
Give us more reasons why.
We've already seen in the last issue. The first issue was very disappointing to anyone who has been a longtime fan of Peter Parker as Spider-Man. The second issue reminded us all why we fell in love with Peter Parker, why we felt like he was the character, he would be the hero that we would all become had we fallen into the circumstances he did and received his powers and lived that particular life. That's who we fell in love with. And in this issue, we have, you know, the continuation of that where the antagonist in this, Regent, is basically the reality here is that Regent has absorbed and imprisoned many of the world's heroes and absorbed their powers. And for whatever reason, he is on the hunt for Spider-Man's powers, and there's apparently something special about gaining these powers for his own use. Really, it's just a fun read. There's more superheroing, like classic Spidey superheroing involved. A mild spoiler alert. If you didn't know by the third issue, you know that this series revolves around what happens when Spidey, you know, when Peter Parker and Mary Jane have a kid, and that kid is being raised to not know that with great power also comes great responsibility. But she is learning it in her own way at her own time, and now that's eventually where we're going to go. But I like the way the story is being told. The characterization has gotten to be a lot more recognizable. You know, it's not it, all of a sudden we know that this is Peter Parker that we all knew and loved. And Slott is telling a good story. Kubert's art has gotten a lot cleaner since the first issue. The first issue was a little on the loose side, but it's gotten very tight. I can't recommend this particular Battle World book enough, Secret Wars book enough, if you are a fan of Spider-Man. So read it, Tim.
Oh, I'll get to it this weekend. All right, clicks of the week. Who wants to start us off?
Dirt, didn't have any more rapid fires?
The only other rapid fire I was going to throw out there was Star Trek. Being the nerd I am, I always have to read the Star Treks. And this particular issue finds a race that has not gained the experience to be in space yet. So the Prime Directive is in play here, and they go down to learn about this culture as much as they can, and they find these people sacrificing babies to these gods, and it turns out the gods are this giant spaceship that comes into orbit around the planet and teleports the little babies up into their spaceship for whatever reason. And somehow this process kills their camouflage, and so they break the Prime Directive inadvertently. They're just standing there as these babies are being lifted off into space. And it's one of those where this is the ongoing 5-year mission. This is the space in between the movies where, you know, it's not the big epic stories that you're going to get on the big screen, and it kind of shows this feels horribly like Star Trek V, kind of told from another perspective. And if you remember Star Trek V, it was not good. And so this just, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. It reminds you of Star Trek V, and you're just kind of, it's only two parts, so at least I know that it's just one more issue to deal with this Joker bot before we go on to the next storyline. So I'm hoping that when we get to 50, we got something good for 50. But this particular one is just not very well inspired. So,
before we get to clips of the week, I want to thank Dylan for joining us tonight. I think he's got to get running, but make sure to go see the Decepticomic shows in D.C. and New York.
Aww.
You may even see Comic Chronicles' own Agent 70 there.
It's tomorrow night.
Let me know if you want to slide through. Yeah, no, thank you for having us. Thanks, Cold Slither. The Decepticomics domination has been dope. This has been cool kicking it with you guys. Hope to get to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have you back on.
All absolutely, right. Especially if you're reading, you know, this, you know, the week's worth of books and trying to stay up on top of the latest news.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of engaged. I'm kind of with it.
Cool.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Have a good one.
Peace.
Later.
All right. Roddy said he had a click in the dock. Somebody have the dock handy?
Yes. Roddy Cat's click is Infinity Gauntlet number 3. Good choice, Roddy Cat. Good choice.
Oh, did you guys hear my cat?
Yeah.
Yes.
If my dog can be on the show, then cat make an appearance.
That's awesome.
Cat was not pleased with Infinity Gauntlet number 3.
Or it might have been cheering. Who knows? I can't talk, cat.
Dude, with this cat, you never know. Yeah. I mean, you just can't. I don't get cats. Cats are weird.
That's funny.
My dog is currently under my desk because I believe the buzzing going on during the GOP debate downstairs on the TV is freaking him out.
Anyone would be scared of the GOP debate at this point.
Yeah, he's got a case of the shakes and the panting mouth. And
oh, my goodness.
All right. Well, for my click, I'm actually going to go out on the limb. Where's that? I've lost my books. I'm lost in my folder. There it is,
no.
John Flood. I'm going with John Flood is my click of the week.
That's a good choice. I like that. That was a sleeper candidate for me as well.
Because it's definitely one where I got to know what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. I got to read the next one, you know.
That's now I got to finish it.
Because, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the beginning part, the part I've read so far kind of confused me with, like, it seemed like the guy on the cover, they showed in the beginning, but then the book tells the story of that big dude that you were discussing earlier. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, my click of the week is Ms. Marvel number 17, team up with Captain Marvel.
It was fun, wasn't it? I'm definitely leaning towards that. I'm torn between that and Renew Your Vows number 3. But I'm Ms. Marvel. This issue of Ms. Marvel is very fun. So, as Dirt clicks back and forth in between them, I'm going to decide on backing up Tim Dog and endorsing Ms. Marvel number 17 this week as my click of the week. Excellent job, Alfona and G. Willow Wilson.
Cool. All right.
Real quick before we go, I wanted to show something that I got. It was it came in my pull last week, but I wasn't able to pick it up. It came in a little late because it's oversized. This book is not the best quality stuff that George Perez has done. I'm talking about George Perez's Sirens. It's being put up by Boom Studios right now.
Right.
I got this pen and ink edition of issue number 1. It's in 11 by 17 format. It's a lot like the artist editions that IDW puts out, but Boom has put this out, and it's basically the pencils and the inked pages of Perez's work, and it's really cool to see the raw artwork, you know, that sometimes gets muddied and muddled under colors, you know, especially if the colors are on the heavier side. They're not like that super light kind of animation style coloring. You know, the more classic combo coloring sometimes really muddies the art, but you know, it's really cool to see
one of the true, you know, one of the great masters of, you know, of the comic book page, you know, seeing the raw pencil art, you know, this is reminiscent of, you know, way back in the day when Perez and Busiek launched or relaunched Avengers. They did something very similar with the number one issue where they showed, they called it the uncut edition or the raw, you know, it was basically the same thing, a pencil. A copy of the pencils, the raw pencils, before the book was inked. And this is just, you know, for anyone that's interested in, you know, how things are laid out and how things are put onto the page before anything else is done to them, how they're put onto the page in pencil, pick up something like this because, you know, seeing an actual comic, you know, reproduced this way is pretty cool. I don't know if you got this in your store, Dirt, or if anyone pulled it.
No, nobody ordered it.
Okay. But this is very cool. Anyway, so now we can get to closing up the show this week.
Yes. Thanks to Dylan for joining us. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at TheDylan1. And follow us on Twitter. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat, who is not here with us, but of course provides feedback and news and much more, is at Roddy Cat and at NewsNerdsNeed. Dirt is at PCN_dirt.
Woohoo! Oh no, the third isn't working still. Wow!
I can't figure it out. So.
And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
And make sure you go to popculturenetwork.com.
Yes, do that.
Please.
We're not begging.
All right, so we will be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, to talk about, I guess, the fallout from the Fantastic Four movie.
Do we have to?
I mean, it'll be 5 minutes at most.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and there'll be some comic book, actual comic book reviews.
Yeah.
We'll do that, too. So we have the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Would you believe-